Good morning. So, how are you getting along with your roommate? These two seem to be doing fine, and I'm sure you have good days with your roommate, but also, I'm sure that there are days when things don't go so well. Does your patience run thin sometimes? Does your roommate drive you crazy? Do you ever wonder if you and your roommate are incompatible? Well, consider this a training ground for the future. Right now, you're learning to tolerate the foibles and idiosyncrasies of others, knowing that full well you have your own weird baggage that sometimes makes you difficult to live with as well. And I'm not just speaking to the dorm students here, but for those of you that live at home too, your life at home has its own set of circumstances that challenge you to pull your weight and to cooperate with others. And it all helps you to prepare for the day when God gives you a spouse. So I hope that you all get plenty of opportunities to practice good things like clear communication and conflict resolution and Christian charity toward others, so that you can be compatible with one another. Today's message, though, is about two that can never be roommates. God calls them incompatible. They are love and fear. Let's look at 1 John chapter 4. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in him. There is no fear in love. But perfect love drives out fear. God is love, John says. What a pure and concise description of God. And more than a description, it's a name for God. God is love. Martin Luther once wrote, "If we should desire to paint a picture to represent God, it would have to be a picture of pure love, to bring out the fact that the divine nature is, as it were, a furnace, aglow with love that fills heaven and earth." Now, Martin Luther wrote this when he was old, after he had learned a thing or two about God's love. But in the early days, when he was back at the monastery, the young monk, Martin Luther, did not feel the love of God in his heart. He only felt fear for God as an angry judge. You see, the church back in his day, 500 years ago, taught a pretty messed up version of the redemption of Christ. Yes, they said, Jesus Christ died for you, but only for your original sin. Think about that. He only died for the sinfulness that you were born with, according to the church in that day. You still had to pay for your personal sins, the one that you commit every day. To do this, you had to confess for each sin orally to a priest, reciting each sin in turn so that you could perform an act of penance to make up for it. And then you could be forgiven and absolved by the priest. And as if this error wasn't enough, it got worse from there. This confession and absolution only took care of the eternal punishment that sin deserves. You still had to suffer the temporal punishment that you had coming to you. This suffering would take place in purgatory. Now, I don't know where they got this. They certainly didn't get it from the Bible. And all of this really bothered the young Martin Luther. His conscience nagged at him constantly. He did a lot of penance there at the monastery to make up for his sins. And he shares some of the fear of judgment in one of his hymns. Let's look at one of his hymns, 387, a couple of stanzas. Stanza 2, "Fast bound in Satan's chains I lay, death brooded darkly o'er me. Sin was my torment night and day, in sin my mother bore me. Yea, deep and deeper still I fell, life had become a living hell, so firmly sin possessed me. My own good works availed me not, no merit they attaining, free will against God's judgment fought, dead to all good remaining. My fears increased till sheer despair left naught but death to be my share. The pangs of hell I suffered. Now maybe you would look at this and say Luther was exaggerating a bit whenever comparing his suffering on earth to that of hell. And you'd probably be right. There is no suffering on earth that can be as bad as hell. But the point I'm trying to make here, and I think Luther's trying to make here, is that he was at the end of his spiritual rope. But the Catholic Church did have a get-out-of-jail-free card in the form of indulgences. If you could part with 1 week's wages, you could tap into the Church's massive supply of grace and avoid spending years in purgatory. And crowds of desperate people, some of them poverty-stricken who really needed that money to put food on their table for their kids, went out and bought these indulgences. Martin Luther spoke out against this practice too, of fleecing the poor for the treasury of the church. Here is thesis number 46. Christians should be taught that unless they have more than they need, they are bound to retain what is necessary for the upkeep of their home and should in no way squander it on indulgences. But the church needed the money. There were a couple of popes in a row, Julius II, who had St. Peter's Basilica built, and then Leo X, who really, they were big spenders here. Loads of marble, lots of artwork. Even the ceiling at the Sistine Chapel was painted, and Michelangelo needed to get paid. But Luther was adamant against this kind of thing too. In thesis number 50, he said, Christians should be taught that if the Pope knew the exactions of his indulgence preachers, he would rather the Church of St. Peter were reduced to ashes than be built with the skin, flesh, and bones of his sheep. And while the Catholic Church was building up its treasury through the sale of indulgences, Luther put everything in perspective with one more thesis here. Number 62, the true treasure of the church is the holy gospel of the glory and grace of God. Martin Luther saw that the church was capitalizing on the fear of the common people and using it for frivolous purposes. Now, Luther was led to the Bible, and he learned that love and fear could not inhabit the heart of a Christian at the same time. Okay, now sidebar here. Just in case you're wondering about this whole love and fear thing in context of the Ten Commandments, let's take a quick look there. In every explanation, Martin Luther wrote, we should fear and love God and so forth. And you're right, this looks like we're supposed to have fear and love in our hearts at the same time. But the fear here is the good fear, if you will. We all should have a healthy respect or fear of a God that can judge us and send us to eternal hellfire, while at the same time have a love for the only God that can save us from our sin. The fear that the Apostle John speaks of in our text is the other fear. It's the fear of hell caused by a lack of trust in God. But once we have the assurance of salvation, then all that's left in our heart can be love and trust in God. There's no fear of judgment. It's an attitude that can't wait until we all get to go to our heavenly home. It's a confident anticipation, knowing that Jesus will take us from the burdens of this world and welcome us into the splendor of the next world. It's a love that drives out all fear. Amen. Now we've already looked at stanzas 2 and 3 of hymn 387, where Luther expressed fear of judgment. Now look at the difference in stanza 4 as we sing.